Hi, you're listening to audio from The Dwelling. We hope you enjoy the message, and for more information, please visit us online at www.thedwellingtx.org.
Have a seat. Booyah! Man, it is so good to be here with y'all. I just wanted to start this by, you know, the classic Seth, some ramble. But I wanted to start this time by simply saying how thankful I really am for each of you. And I especially want to say thank you for the opportunity to get to be many of yours. And I get it that for some of you, it's not the case, and that's okay. And that's just not how you see it or whatever. But for many of you, the opportunity to get to be your pastor is truly incredible. And I want to thank you that you allow me to be in your life in such a way that you know, whether it be some struggle or some problem, maybe it's a 2 a.m. phone call, maybe it's, hey, somebody's dying, maybe it's, hey, somebody's hurting, somebody needs, somebody's sick, maybe it's some joy, maybe it's something good, a 2 a.m, hey, we just had a baby, whatever it might be, thank you for letting me get to be part of that with you, because I'm telling you, like, that brings me so much joy. And I know sometimes it's you know, we're planting this church and it's kind of like, so many different things going on. But I truly mean it that it's a privilege. It's a real privilege to get to be that for so many of you. And so thank you. I wanted to kind of say that publicly. Thank you for your continued support to Jacqueline and I and my family. We're incredibly blessed and we're incredibly blown away that God would move some Wisconsin boy and some Oregon girl down here to Texas to be all of a sudden in cowboy hat wearing, cowboy boot wearing world, you know, where the AR-15 is like, you know, for some of you, that's your other kid. I'm blown away that God has brought us here and get to do ministry and do life with so many of you. So thank you for that. I really mean that. I know it's kind of maybe cheesy, I don't know, but just thank you for that privilege to get to do that with you guys. As we're kind of moving here into the time of kind of the message, you're catching us, if it's your first time out, you're catching us in our series that we're calling The Dwelling Defined. And what we're doing is we're really spending like a couple of weeks, depending on what it actually ends up being kind of here for us, but on really our mission and vision as a church. And last week, if you remember, last week we kicked off our whole series with our name. We talked about The Dwelling. What does that even mean, right? The Dwelling, and what is that all about? Well, last week, and I just want to share this with you, today on your way out, if you weren't here last week, and actually, Mr. Richard, we got to make this happen. I forgot to actually tell you this. Sorry. But we need to get a basket of those rocks out. We have those rocks from last week, right? Still? We're going to put a basket of rocks out. This isn't going to make any sense to you. But if you weren't here last week, on your way out, grab a rock. Grab one of these little rocks. Put it in your pocket. Then what I want you to do is I want you to go to our website or our mobile app, okay? And I want you to go listen to last week's message. And that's all that I'm saying is listen to last week's message, maybe on your commute this week or whatever, and just catch up a little bit about where we are, and then that rock in your pocket is going to make a lot of sense because it's not going on your way out. I get that. But grab that little rock if you weren't here last week, put it in your pocket, and listen to last week's message. And we kind of unpacked what does that look like to be the dwelling? What does that mean, okay? Today, we're not talking about our name. We're actually going to be talking about our mission. What's our mission as a church? What's our mission? What are we all about? What is the kind of central identity of some of the things that we are and who we are? Well, our mission, I can just tell you, I'm going to tell you right now, our mission as a church is disconnected to disciple. There it is. That's our mission. Disconnected to disciple. Now, that's not a sentence. Okay, that's not a sentence, but disconnected to disciple is like the core of who we are as a church. Disconnected to disciple, and it's essentially taking it from Matthew 28, okay? For those of you that are like, I never saw that in the Bible. Well, just settle down. Matthew 28, Jesus says this right before he ascends into heaven. He says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. That's what I want you to do. And essentially, we just kind of tweaked the language a little bit and made it sound kind of nice so that you can remember it too. D words, a disconnected to disciple. You're not going to forget that, okay? Go make disciples of all the nations. And the nations being people who are disconnected. That's what I want you to do. So that's who we're going to be about, because that's what Jesus says to do. I believe the mission for every single church on the planet is this. This is the mission of all churches. So disconnected disciple, you might say it a little different, okay? You might say a little catchphrase or a little thought like this, but this should be the mission of the church. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about, as a church, what it means to be a church that is helping move from disconnected to being a disciple of Jesus Christ and what that really means. And then at the very center of that is a little catchphrase that you guys see all the time, or you should. And the catchphrase is, come as you are. Come as you are. Because it's that really is like the philosophy of ministry for us as a church, as we keep our focus on disconnected to disciple. At the center of that is God meeting people where they are to help us move from being disconnected to being a disciple of His. Come as you are. You see it on our sign out front. You see it on our little koozies, I think. I think we have those on there. I don't know. We got them all over the place. We're a come as you are church. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, well, where is it in the Bible where this stuff can kind of play out? Well, it's all over the place. It's literally all over the place. Disconnected to disciple. Come as you are. It's all over. I could have talked about a ton of different stories, but today I ended up choosing one. And today's story is actually, we're going to be learning about a guy named Matthew. And actually, in Matthew, in the book of Matthew, found in the Bible, Matthew chapter 9, we actually, we find this story about Matthew, who's the same Matthew who wrote Matthew. We find this story where Matthew moves from disconnected to being a disciple. And this is what it says. Listen to what it says. Matthew chapter 9. We're going to camp out here today, guys. Matthew chapter 9, verse 9. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew. Maybe Levi. Matthew Levi. Okay. Kind of same guy. Sitting at the tax booth. Probably the same guy. And he said to him, follow me. And he rose and followed him. That's, folks, that's packed full of stuff. I could stop there and just preach for the next like 4 hours. But I'll just listen. And as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard it, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. For I came to call the righteous. I came to call the righteous. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. All right. Who's been sick this past month? Who's been sick? Yeah. All right, who's sick today? Who's sick today? Yeah, so you might like want to, you know, kind of move away from these. I thought maybe I'd catch some people. Some of you are honest. I appreciate that. Man, our family got sick over Christmas. All right, we got sick, and we got like the drainage, and we got the coughs, and we got what is the one thing called? I'm trying to think of a fever. Okay, some of you get the fever and stuff like that. We all got sick, and I don't know about you guys, but when I get sick, I'll be honest with you, I become an incredibly huge baby. You know what I'm saying? Anybody else out there, like men, any man out there, any man? I'm just kidding. I'm just trying to help me out here. Man, us guys, though, we struggle with this, don't we? Is that, no, Tom, that doesn't struggle. Okay, I struggle with this. And I feel like women are kind of in agreement that men, when we get sick, we just turn into huge babies. But and some of you got, but I also believe when men get sick, we get sicker. I do believe that. That is true. That is true. We get really sick. But when we get sick, I mean, it's serious. I'm kidding. Oh, my goodness. I feel like some of you are going to walk up. No. But I'm just being honest with you. When I get sick, I feel it, and I become a huge baby, and life gets terrible, and it's just the worst. All right? I'm just being honest. And even this time around, like, I wanted to go to the doctor so bad, but Jackie wasn't going to the doctor. So I was like, fine, I'm not going either. And so we just toughed it out. It was a tough deal, but we were down for like 2 weeks. But as I was thinking about sickness, and, you know, Jesus saying he's come to bring healing to the sick, not just to those who are healthy and got it all figured out. What is it in Matthew? What is it? What is it about Matthew that Jesus looks in and he sees that sick? That's not healthy. That's almost, you know, when you're sick, you kind of disconnect yourself from society in a good way, right? That's an important thing, like to not let other people get sick. But you start to kind of disconnect. What is it in Jesus seeing Matthew that he sees that's not right, not quite healthy? There's a sickness there. And I think on the one hand, on the kind of surface level, he looks at Matthew and he sees tax collector, right? He sees tax collector. He sees somebody who in the society that they're living in, kind of the cultural norm, is to see somebody like a tax collector and to see somebody who's socially disconnected, somebody who's definitely religiously there's a disconnect. He looks at Matthew and sees somebody who the culture is saying, you are different than us. You are disconnected from us. I mean, this is pretty standard of tax collectors at this time. And we don't know exactly how tax collectors are perceived, but it seems like, as you kind of do a little studying, it seems like tax collectors are going to be thought of as sellouts to essentially Rome, right? Because now they're taking taxes, sending that money to Rome. Rome continues to oppress their region. It just doesn't feel right. And so they're kind of like, come on, man. Like you're part of us, and it seems like you're kind of working for them. And then on top of that, there's this feeling, and it's probably pretty true, that greed is pretty saturated within the context of being a tax collector. And so they're probably potentially at times, not maybe everybody, but often maybe taking money that they shouldn't be taking, potentially pocketing it. Tax collectors are people who are just kind of out there and they're not connected to the rest of us. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, well, where is that in our own culture? Are there people that kind of at a surface level, not a surface, I'm not trying to kind of minimize it, but it seems like are disconnected from us? Who might that person be? Well, as we think about it, I mean, just kind of a starting place, you know, you think of somebody who's maybe disconnected religiously. So you look around and you're like, oh, man, empty chair. What's up? Where are you at, man? And so there's a feeling we're kind of connected, but, you know, somebody out there is disconnected. Or maybe it's somebody who, as a culture and as a community, not only here, but just kind of our whole community, we look at and we're like, man, you've done something really bad. You've committed maybe like a big sin. Okay? So maybe you are somebody who struggles with something like sexual identity. Oh, man. So then people are like, oh, man, who's that? Or maybe you're somebody who's embezzled money. See, our culture's kind of like, man, you know, you kind of just hang out over there. Or maybe you're somebody who's been to prison. Or you've done drugs. And see, us as a community, right? I got my four kids. I'm kind of like, hey, I don't need you guys hanging out with those guys. And so we even today have people kind of like Matthew who are disconnected from us that we look at and we're like, yeah, you're kind of a social or a community kind of outcast. And we have those people too. And when Jesus is seeing Matthew, he's seeing somebody on the surface as somebody who's kind of like that. And then, and not only that, but Jesus also can see deeper, can't he? See, Jesus sees deep down into Matthew's heart. And what does he see? He sees the real sickness. He sees someone who's actually not only disconnected from society, not only disconnected from a certain communities, religious or non, but he looks at somebody and he sees somebody who's disconnected from God. He's disconnected from God. Now, what is that? I mean, we know what it is that might disconnect us from God. Our sin, as huge as they might be, or as small as they might be. The disconnect that happens between us and God, in rebellion against him. As we begin to turn from him as God and creator to do our own thing. And Jesus, right in the middle of that, in that moment where he sees surface but also deeper. And this is what I want you to get this. Jesus, right in that moment, comes up to Matthew. And he extends Matthew an invitation. Matthew, I want you to be my disciple. I want you, Matthew, to be my disciple. Come, right? Here's the scripture again. Come and what? Follow me. But I want you to understand the moment. I want you to understand the context. I want you to understand the disconnectedness. And Jesus comes right into that moment, meeting Matthew right where he is, and says, Matthew, I want you to come follow me. That's incredible. Isn't that amazing? You just let that sit with you. That's amazing. And as I was thinking about this, I was thinking, man, we have this stuff all the time happen. People we want to follow. People we want to connect with. People that, see, Jesus, as he's saying, come follow me. What's he saying? He said, come do what I do. Come be like me. Come learn from me. I'm going to teach you some stuff that I want to have happen in your life. I want you to do. And I was thinking, man, well, where in my life do I have stuff like that? I mean, obviously, I have my dad, I have siblings, I have friends that I look up to, and I'm like, I want to be like them. I want to do what they do. I want to parent like them. I want to be a husband like them. I want to do this. I want to do this. But no, some of it's even just kind of simpler. You guys know who this guy is? You guys know who this guy is? Anybody? Anybody? Well, okay, you should know because his name's right there. Bill Jordan. Okay, Bill Jordan, who's the president and CEO of Realtree Outdoors, okay, he's got the Monster Bucks videos. Are you kidding me, people? Nobody? Nobody, okay. Oh, one guy. Awesome, dude. So Bill Jordan, I look up to this guy. This guy's like a stud, okay? And as I watch this guy, and I watch his hunting videos, and I watch, and there's other guys like Michael Waddell and other people that I look up to as hunters, but I watch them, and what do I watch? What do I see happen? I see Bill Jordan, right, pulling his bow back and firing and killing like a giant deer. And so as I see that take place in the video, I'm like, I want to be like him. I want to do what he does. I want to shoot a monster buck, right? That's just the reality. And so what happens is Bill Jordan, okay, Bill Jordan, he gets out his little bleat call, okay? Bill Jordan gets out his bleat call. And what does he do? I'm watching this on the video, right? Bill Jordan hits his bleat call. Oh. And then he hits it again. And then Bill Jordan, okay, what does he do? He hits his rattles. Right? Depends on the season, you know, maybe a little harder, Yeah, it just depends. He's doing that. Okay, so as I'm watching that, what do? I'm taking notes, and I'm thinking, man, okay, he just hit his bleat call twice. Okay, he didn't hit it three times. He hit it twice, and then he hit his rattle. So when I'm out in the woods, what do? Two, rattle, right? I mean, I'm watching it. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. The guy's got, 100,000 acres, and this is what he does for a living, and he's probably got some fence around the deer, and they're just shooting it out of the fence. But still, even though I know that that's true, and they got it tied up, and, it's tied to the tree, I still do this because that's what he's doing. And he's having success, and he's shooting monster bucks. And so I'm like, that's exactly what Bill Jordan does. That's what I'm going to do. And so we follow him. We do the same stuff with all sorts of people. And Stephen Curry, you guys know this guy? NBA? Okay? Anybody follow basketball? Now, okay, this guy is a stud, and I'm telling you, he is changing the game of basketball. Michael Jordan, what did he do? He'd grab that basketball and he'd, right? And jam the thing, right? Now what do you, and kids, what would we do with growing up? You remember setting the chair up? We set the chair up because we couldn't jam, and so we would, I can still remember doing that. Stephen Curry, what's he doing? He sits back, shooting three-pointers, half-court shots when nobody's blocking. And now what do you see? You go to the gym. You go to the gym, and these high school kids, what are they doing? Three-point shot, Stephen Curry. That's how I'm going to do it. He's changing the game of basketball. Now you can't just block him. You got to, be on him at half court. What about, I don't know, who's next? Who do I got? Booyah. Taylor Swift. Anybody want to sing? Yeah, exactly. Some of our girls in the audience. Yeah, Taylor Swift. Ah. I love it. But we look at Taylor Swift, we're like, I want to sing like her. I want to be like her. I want to do what she's doing. Who else do I got? Boom. Right? Anybody even know who this is? Elon Musk, right? I mean, innovator. Some of you who are in business and entrepreneurs, you want to be like this guy. I want to be like him. I want to think outside the box. I want to do things that are crazy and send people to Mars and start a new people group on Mars. That'd be awesome. Some of you are all into that. How many of you have your houses? How many of you have your houses designed exactly like these folks? I've been over to your houses. And you guys watch them, and you're just like, I want to put my little plate where she put her plate. And so you do all sorts of crazy stuff. You have the little wood beam, that you turned and you made it into a wood beam, even though it's not a wood beam. You did all sorts of stuff like that. Because that's what we do. We grab onto people and we're like, I want to do what they do. I want to follow them. If he's hitting his rattle twice, that's what I'm going to do. Because it seems like there's big bucks there. When it seems like her house is really beautiful, I want my house to look like hers. It seems like he's shooting threes. I want to do that. So my question, okay, that's just kind of the setup of my question, which is simply this. When we look at Jesus, what do we see? What do we see when we look at Jesus? When you see Jesus, even just, and of course, we got all the Bible and stuff to look at stuff, but just even this text, this little Matthew 9 through 13, what do we see in Jesus that makes us wonder, would I want to be like him? That's kind of the question. Do you actually like what you see when you see Jesus? Huh? I don't know. Do you like what you see? Sometimes maybe so. Sometimes maybe not. I see in this text, just kind of thinking about it, I see someone who's a challenger to the status quo. I see someone who challenges the religiosity that's so prevalent at that time and equally prevalent today. religiousness. I see a guy who comes up and is this incredible equalizer, taking a moment like these meals that are typically at this time used, meals between people and in kind of society. These meals are typically used to accentuate division, divisiveness, distinctions. I'm here, you're there, you're there. That's primarily how these meals are. It kind of reveals and reminds everybody of their spot. And Jesus comes and changes that. And what he actually begins to change and he begins to reveal is that there is an equal playing field between all people. And the equal playing field is that even though there might be some differences on the surface, at the core, the biggest heart issue is a disconnection from God. It's a sickness that the tax collectors share with the Pharisees. It's a sickness that the garbage guy who picks up trash shares with the pastor. There's a disconnectedness with God. There's a problem there, an unhealthiness there that's of the deepest places. And Jesus comes into the midst of that and begins to bring equality and says, actually, you all struggle with this. And he begins to reveal, if only the Pharisees would recognize it, if only the religious leaders would recognize it, he begins to reveal that they too are sick. They too are in need of the great physician. What do we see with this Jesus who comes up in love, incredible love, bringing love and sees Matthew? He sees Matthew and invites him on a journey, invites him to follow him. What does that mean to follow Jesus? Why would you follow him? Why would you follow Jesus? There's another question for you. Why would you follow Jesus? As I was thinking about that, I was thinking, you know, I think we would follow Jesus because so many of us, we don't know the way. Or do you? But that's all you have to do is just look at your life and ask the question, do you even know the way out of the family, or maybe the feud you have within your family? Do you know the way out? Do you even know the way out of the stuff that's going on between you and your neighbor? Do you even know how to get out of that? Do you even actually know the way to raising your kids right? I don't. I mean, I think I'm trying. You know, I'm do you even know the way around so many different aspects of your life? I don't know, but as I reflect on that, I think to myself so often, I don't know the way. I don't know the way. And so as we think about this at a deeper level, to think of the question, do I even know the way of my life? Do I even know the way of 2019? Do I even know the way? And I'm so reminded in that moment. I'm so reminded of Thomas in John chapter 14. What does he say? Thomas asks that question to Jesus. Thomas asks him, Jesus, how are we going to know the way? We don't know where you are going. I don't even know where you're going, Jesus. I'm connected to you. But my biggest question, which is fascinating, that never stood out to me before until this week. But he asks him, where are you going? I don't know where you're going, Jesus. And Jesus simplifies it. Jesus just sums it up. Jesus just takes all the questions, all of it, and just brings the most simple, concise, pointed answer. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? I am the way. I'm the way. Man. Do you believe that to be true? That Jesus is the way. It's either incredibly arrogant or it's true. That's what you're left with, I mean, to kind of think about. I am the way. Do you even know the way? I come up with all the time in my head, no, I don't know the way. So when Jesus says, I am the way, and Jesus goes to the cross, and he pays the price for our sin, and Jesus doesn't just stay dead, but he rises again victoriously to bring you not only the way, the truth, but also to bring you life. To promise you life, true life, the best life. To have a good, good Father who actually wants what's best for us. And he invites us now in the middle. He comes to you. And listen, guys, if you today, if you're in this room and you are the second biggest sinner, if you're the second biggest sinner in this room, because I know you're not the first. I know you're not the first. That one I got. I got that one. I'll claim the first most disconnectedness. But today, if you're the second most biggest sinner, that's not good grammar. If that's you today, I want you to know that the God of the universe comes to you right there in that moment. And he says, come follow me. Follow me. I'm the way. I'm the way. And I'm telling you, that scares me. Because I'm kind of like Thomas. I don't know exactly where he's always going. I don't always know exactly what's around every corner. But I know definitely by myself I don't have a clue. And as we hook up with him, as we lean close to him, and as he leans close to us, he takes us on a journey unlike any other. Do you want to follow him? Do you want to follow him today? Do you want to continue to follow him today? For many of you, it's a continuation. I want to keep following you, Jesus. Wherever you go, whatever you teach me, whatever you're doing, I want to do. I want to be like you. You hit it three times, I'm going to hit it three times. You hit the rattle bag, Jesus, that's what I'm going to do. So let me leave you with a blessing and a reminder that we need to take everything down that you see basically from here on back and put it in that back closet. We can always use help. If you got to take off or something, that's totally cool too. And keep an eye on Facebook and all that kind of stuff for events and just daily reading plans and stuff. We're going to be kicking off this next week as well. Let me leave you with a blessing. May our God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit bless you and keep you this next week. May he be right there with you in every single thing you do. And may he give you the strength to keep following him. In Jesus' name, amen. Have a great week, guys. The Lord bless you.